Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Earth Explorers from all over the world. Good to have you here. Sorry for the late start. You know, internet radio is not the only media that's plagued with technical problems. I was actually listening to a popular daytime talk radio program on broadcast radio, and the power went out in the studio right in the middle of a monologue. And they didn't get it back up for about 5 to 8 minutes. And then it took about 10 more minutes to get all their computers rebooted back up and get the call log filled up again. They lost all their callers, which had been on hold for about 45 minutes. So we're not the only ones plagued with technical problems, and we're just, grinning and bearing it sometimes. We have to bear with the idiosyncrasies of internet radio. So welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast is about 43 degrees and clear. It's going to get down again frosty tonight, so if you have to get up and go to work tomorrow, give yourself an extra 10 minutes to scrape that windshield. Special guest tonight. We have Veterans Today magazine writer Mike Harris coming on the program tonight. He is going to talk to us about the great Chinese drone caper. We have talked a couple of weeks briefly about the RQ-170 drone that mysteriously landed without a scratch in Iran all by itself with nobody helping it, and how mysterious that was. And I had brought up on the program whether or not it was a Trojan horse or not. And then I did some research. And one of our great listeners out there in the West, I believe in Colorado, wrote in and said, you need to talk to Mike Harris. So read his article, wrote him, and he agreed to come on the program. So he's going to be on the program at 6 p.m. Pacific time tonight. It's about 40 minutes from now. You don't want to miss this. Believe me, this is going to blow this thing wide open, and you're going to get to listen to it right here. The solar wind right now is a mild 318 kilometers per second. There are 4 wimpy sunspots on the sun right now, and no risk of solar flares. However, last month, a massive solar storm launched itself toward Mars and Mercury, just as NASA's new rover, Curiosity, was blasting off from Cape Canaveral in the same direction. Well, researchers say it was a welcome coincidence. For the first time in Mars rover history, Curiosity is equipped to study solar storms, and it will be monitoring space weather all the way to the red planet. This is, without any doubt, the brightest event that has happened at the time when a satellite could be launched, able to measure that. Also, relative to the sun, we've been watching Comet Lovejoy, and it's so amazing that SOHO picked this up. The comet's nucleus, thought to be twice as wide as a football field, which is not really huge for a comet, says it, they thought it would skim approximately 140,000 kilometers. It's about 1.2 solar radii above the solar surface on the 15th or 16th. That was a couple of days ago. At such close range, solar heating will almost certainly destroy the comet's icy core, creating a cloud of vapor and comet dust that will reflect lots of sunlight. That's what they thought. That's what they thought. They go on to say, if Comet Lovejoy gets as bright as a magnitude -4 or -5, there's a tiny but non-zero chance that it could become visible in the night sky, in the sky next to the sun. That's the daytime sky. Indeed, something similar happened to Comet McNaught in January 2007 when it was visible in broad daylight. You might want to stand in the shadow of a tall building to block the sun so that you can allow the comet to be seen in the blue sky nearby. Now, it was discovered on December 2nd by, and you guessed it, an amateur astronomer, Terry Lovejoy of Australia, no doubt with his own personal telescope. As I told you many times, most of the comets these days are discovered by amateurs that have bought really good telescopes, and you can get yours very easy by going to the Discovery Channel store. The comet is an unusually large member of the Crutes family. Crutes sun grazers are fragments of a single giant comet, probably the Great Comet of 1106, that broke apart back in the 12th century. SOHO sees one plunging into the sun every few days, but most are very small, no more than 10 meters wide. Comet Lovejoy is at least 10 times larger than usual. And then this came in day before yesterday. Incredibly, sun-grazing Comet Lovejoy survived its close encounter with the sun. It's unbelievable. Lovejoy flew only 140,000 kilometers over the stellar surface, a fuzzy ball of ice. Experts expected the icy sun diver to be destroyed, vaporized, vamoose. Instead, NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory caught the comet emerging from perihelion, apparently intact. That's right. Comet Lovejoy began the week as a chunk of dusty, rocky ice more than 200 meters in diameter. No one can say how much of the comet's core remains intact or how long it will hang together after the searing heat of perihelion. There is still a possibility that Comet Lovejoy will start to fragment, says researcher Carl Bettams in a NASA news release. He goes on to say, it's been through a tremendously traumatic event. Structurally, it could be extremely weak. That's traumatic for the comet, not for Carl. At first, the emerging comet was missing its tail. This might have been a trick of geometry. The comet's tail was pointing away from Earth, so we couldn't see it. Temporarily invisible, you know, due to foreshortening. On the other hand, the absence might have been genuine. The comet's store of surface volatile materials could have been baked out by the fiery transit, leaving the nucleus unable to mount substantial jets of gas and dust. Newly arriving SOHO images show the tail, however, is reforming. There could be more surprises in store for this unpredictable comet, by the way. Stay tuned for updates. For one thing, it now has a new and very fast trajectory, and we don't yet have calculations for where it is headed, in or out of the solar system. On the night of December 13th and 14th, NASA's All Sky Meteor Network recorded 35 fireballs streaking over the southern USA. 22 of them had remarkably similar orbits. The Geminids have been active this week as Earth passes through the asteroid's mysterious debris system. The other non-Geminid orbits correspond to random meteoroids, not belonging to any organized debris stream. Random meteoroids litter the inner solar system and produce a daily drizzle of sporadic fireballs. NASA's Fireball Network, which connects multiple cameras in New Mexico, Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee, is a smart system. It rapidly and autonomously calculates meteoroid orbits from the fireballs it records. It's kind of fascinating. If you actually go to spaceweather.com, you can see this and how the orbits have been tracked back to their origin, sort of like a backward tracking system. Now, a couple of years ago, actually this was in, I guess it was a long time ago, it was in 1996, I submitted a paper that had to do with this, and this probe was launched in the fall of 1996, and was using the same technology that I had helped develop in the early 1980s. MARSIS is the system I'm talking about. It's an orbiting measurement system that goes around Mars. Well, MARSIS recently completed its measurement campaign over the Martian North Pole. The Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionospheric Sounding, an instrument on board Mars Express, has recently completed a subsurface sounding campaign over the planet's North Pole. Now, I'll explain the details of how this works here in just a minute, but it's important that you understand that that it really takes two antennas to make this function to any kind of being able to read depth in a quantitative way. So this is just, is it there or is it not kind of measurement. We call it a qualitative measurement. The campaign was interrupted by the suspension of science observations several times between August and October due to safe modes into anomalies in the operation of the spacecraft's solid-state mass memory system. As MARSIS best observes in the dark, which for the North Pole only occurs every few years, it was among the first instruments to resume observation once a partial workaround for the problems had been implemented. The primary objective of MARSIS, this orbiting satellite around Mars, is to map the distribution of water and ice in the upper layers of the Martian subsurface, like a few thousand feet deep. Using techniques similar to oil prospecting on Earth, the instrument analysis uses the reflection of radio waves down to a few kilometers in the subsurface. It is able to distinguish between dry, frozen, and wet soil. Well, that oil prospecting was developed by me. And I was the one that submitted the paper to NASA in the early 90s. And in 1996, the launch vehicle was accepted. So the polar regions of Mars are of particular interest because climate variations affect the quantities of water and ice dust found in the polar deposits. The North Pole measurement campaign lasted from June until November of this year, taking place during orbits 9,500 to 10,100. The observations extended from the pole out to just beyond 45 degrees north. Data acquisition was affected by solar events, as well as the technical problems with the spacecraft, and that could be expected. 40% of the available orbits were lost, with roughly a quarter of the losses being attributable to solar activity and three-quarters to the suspension of observations. The velocity of Mars Express at Paracenter is extremely high, and the flyovers of the North Polar Cap lasted only between 3 and 7 minutes per orbit. That's all the chance it had to get a look at what it was going to see. And then it only looked at a ribbon of it. These had to be stitched together. The accumulated observing time over 600 orbits was about 3,000 minutes. Mars Express, therefore, spent a total of about 2 days over the North Polar Cap in the whole observing season. From June to November, about 25 hours were spent acquiring data while the pole was in darkness, and another 25 hours observing the pole while it was in sunlight. In the period from June to November, the spacecraft flew over the pole at very low altitudes, about 1,000 kilometers. Having the spacecraft in a low orbit over the target is a requirement for operating the radar. No signal would be received at higher altitudes. Now, many of you know, because you heard the report I broadcast of my work with this type of radar on Earth from 1983 through 1987, the radio signals can be focused narrowly on the broadcast side, sort of like a laser beam, not quite that narrow, but quite narrow with the right antenna. But when the signals reach the substrata, they are reflected, they're absorbed, they're distorted, excuse me, and when they're picked up, they reach the surface attenuated, that is, dampened, quietened down, about 70 dB. That's about 10 to the 7th times quieter. You have to be within 18 inches of the soil to pick these signals up, or they are scattered and lowered by the square of the distance from the reflection zone. It therefore takes a second antenna to triangulate with the first to get the depth. You know, the tangent of the receiving angle times the distance between the antenna will give you the depth. Simple trigonometry. The more accurately you can measure the distance, and we used a laser distance meter, the more accurate your detection may be for depth. Now, MARSIS, as I said, can only be qualitative for this very reason. There's no second antenna. And so you cannot gather the signals in flight for multiple Doppler reasons. You really have to correct for all of this. The faster you're traveling, the more confused the signals are. And I told you that in a previous broadcast that they could retune the receiver once the project was completed when their search for substrata water, and they could detect oil and gas, as I did with the technology in 1983. And the reason I asked them to do this in my paper was to prove that there was once life on Mars and that oil does not come from dinosaurs. It probably comes from algae. My theory is that on Earth, trillions of tons of algae once converted the carbon dioxide atmosphere of Earth into oxygen, same as it does today, except we have far less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than we did, and so we have far less algae in the seas than we had then. And the complex saturated carbon chemistry of oil is the result of heat and pressure and time. As far as I know, oil is not abiotic, not completely anyway. Oil fields do go dry and stay dry. If you don't believe me, go down to Texas, go to East Tennessee, go to Pennsylvania. You'll see. I've been to many, many oil fields that boomed with 2,000 barrels a day and dropped within 20 years to less than one barrel a day. The oil may seep to fractured areas over time, but the production of oil took place millions of years ago, and it will one day run out. The MARSIS program could prove that by finding oil on Mars. By the way, it was that publication of that paper in 1996 that landed me in the documentary Holes in Heaven about the Navy's weapon system called HARP with Dr. Nick Begich. Coming up in our next hour, we have Mike Harris, who is a writer for Veterans Today magazine, and he's going to come on and talk to us about the great Chinese-Iranian stealth reconnaissance drone theft caper. Oh, this is a this is a story you don't want to miss. This is really going to be a mystery unraveled right here on X Squared Radio. Before we get there, I want to make sure you know that you can call in. So if you have been watching this story in the news, and it doesn't matter what channel you listen to, you're going to get the government story. You're going to get the Iranian story, and you're going to get the government story, and somewhere in between you're going to be saying, you know, something just doesn't make sense about this. Because if the darn thing just malfunctioned, usually when aircraft malfunction, it's a splat. Yeah, aircraft rarely land themselves on a runway in a foreign country without a scratch on them if they malfunction. I think the aircraft was working perfectly fine. And you're gonna learn more about this at the top of the hour. I also want to let you know that Maya 2012, this is the great event of the planet, taking place December 13th through 22nd of 2012. Why am I talking about it now? Because this is a big deal, and because it's probably going to sell out, which means if you don't make your plans, you don't see yourself there at ground zero where this whole thing with 2012 began back in the 5th century when King Pakal put the mystery down on his tomb lid and then buried his tomb, or his son buried his father's tomb, in Piedras Negras to be discovered in 1958 and analyzed by the man that started it all, Jose Arguez, who came on this program a couple of years ago and talked about it. I want to see you there. I'm going to be there. Greg Braden's going to be there. Other world experts on the event of 2012 are going to be there. And we're going to be at Ground Zero at Chichen Itza. Chichen Itza in Mexico. Okay? You need to be there too. It's 10 days. We're leaving from Houston. You get yourself to Houston and everything else is taken care of. December 13th through 22. Go to xsquaredradio.com. And click on the orange banner on the right-hand side. It says Maya 2012. Maya 2012. Click on that banner and at least get a deposit in. Make your commitment today and be there with us. Now, as if we are not that great of an attraction, although I think we are, because this whole 2012 mystery is going to be solved on that day, and you're going to be able to tell your grandchildren when they ask you, Grandpa, Grandma, where were you on December 21st, 2012? You're going to be able to tell them, I was at Ground Zero. I was there. I felt the magic. Guess who else is going to be there? Sting and Carlos Santana. Not associated with this event, but they're going to be playing at the same place during the same period of time. It doesn't get any better than that, people. Come on. This is the event of a millennia, let alone a lifetime. You get the chance to go because you're going to tell your friends and you're going to go with them, and it's going to be awesome. Now, I want you to be part of the program tonight. Our toll-free number anywhere in the country, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. You call that number, it'll automatically roll over to the other lines. Now, if you're not in the United States, not in North America, then you need to go to the website, bbsradio.com, click on Channel 2, and the web phone numbers are listed there. I don't have them on my website yet because they've changed this week. Maybe my producer is listening and they'll put it in my little text window here and I'll be able to recite it to you. But if you want to be on the program, it's 888-429-5471. At the top of the hour, we have Mike Harris, a writer for Veterans Today magazine. He has a long resume of defense work, consultation, investigative reporting. This is going to reveal to you what really happened. Now, in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to go over his article that he wrote, because we're not going to reread this article. But this is really something that does not need to be breezed over, because it affects everything. It is the answer to why serving in the American Armed Forces just became much more dangerous. Thanks to Bill Clinton, and Mike claims also Newt Gingrich. So you need to pay close attention. By the way, I also want to let you know some Ron Paul news. Ron Paul was on Jay Leno the other night. I am told it was nothing short of fantastic. So you need to go to YouTube, look up the Ron Paul Jay Leno interview. It's short, but I think it will distinguish him in a very positive way for you from the other candidates. Ron Paul is on the move, and I tweeted today that X Squared Radio has officially endorsed Ron Paul for President of the United States. So there you go. Now, this drone, the RQ-170, is the intelligence gift of the century. The national insecurity stakes just went up once again. Being in the armed forces of any country, any time, has always been a hazardous occupation. But thanks to the gross incompetence, malfeasance, and short-sightedness of our current and former elected officials, it just became much, much deadlier to be a U.S. serviceman. A couple of weeks ago, it was revealed that a fifth-generation, state-of-the-art, and it really officially doesn't even exist yet, U.S. reconnaissance drone was stolen. Mike Harris means captured by the Iranians. This is an article, a short couple of paragraphs, by Ali Akbar Darani from Tehran, Iran. Iran deliberately delayed its announcement that it had captured an American surveillance drone to test U.S. reaction, the country's foreign minister said Saturday. Ali Akbar Salehi said Tehran finally went public with its possession of the RQ-170 Sentinel stealth drone to disprove contradictory statements from U.S. officials. Quote, "When our armed forces nicely brought down the stealth American surveillance drone, we didn't announce it for several days to see what the other party, that would be us, says, and to test their reaction," close quote, Salehi told the official IRNA news agency. He goes on to say, "Days after Americans made contradictory statements, our friends at the armed forces put this drone on display," close quote. Salehi and Iran's position is not to return the drone, but he didn't completely rule out the possibility of a deal. The IRNA, Salehi goes on to say, "Any decision-making about the issue rests with the Supreme National Security Council. The council is Iran's highest security decision-making body and handles the country's talks with the West over Iran's disputed nuclear program." Salehi said Iran won a complicated technological battle with the U.S. by intercepting and taking control of the plane with an electronic ambush. He goes on to say, "Regardless of whether the U.S. believes it or not, the armed forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran brought down the aircraft largely intact, without assistance from any foreign country." Now, that's a pretty key statement to make, you know, because that is going to be a very key contradictory statement in about 15 minutes when we bring Mike Harris on. You're going to learn something quite a bit differently. Without assistance from any foreign country. What do you think? 888-429-5471. American officials have said that U.S. intelligence assessments indicate that Iran neither shot the drone down nor used electronic or cyber technology to force it from the sky. They contend the drone malfunctioned. Yeah, I know. I get it. Look, you're preaching to the choir here. I understand. Okay, slow down on the texts. I have more. Okay? It's not a malfunction. I know it. Hold on. How did this happen? And what is the big deal anyway? An unmanned drone flying at 50,000 feet, invisible to radar and undetectable. So how was it stolen? How did they even know it was there? You've heard the news, the comments, and useless speculation by brainless reporters. Now you're going to hear what really happened and what the risks really are for our planet. Mike Harris spent his entire adult career in the technology sector, specifically the semiconductor sector, which was due to the actions that occurred during the Clinton administration, while Mr. Gingrich was Speaker of the House, by the way. The semiconductor industry was offshored to China. I don't know if you know what that means. Prior to that time, the U.S. was a integrated circuit powerhouse. Ever hear of Silicon Valley? Yeah, the U.S. was in the top 10. In fact, for a long time, was number one in the semiconductor industry. along with Israel and perhaps Ireland. But the semiconductor industry was offshored to China, no doubt to lower costs. Budget cutting. This industrial sector no longer manufactures in the USA. Let me say that one more time. It wasn't just textiles. It wasn't just furniture. It wasn't just microelectronics. This industrial sector no longer manufactures in the USA. In fact, Mike served as a technology advisor to a certain member of the House Committee on Science and Technology. It was during that period of time, 1994 to 2000, that certain free trade agreements were being passed and ratified. You remember the free trade agreement, don't you? NAFTA, 1992, signed by Bill Clinton just a few days after he was elected. Yeah, that one. And ratified. Specifically NAFTA, GATT, and membership for China within the World Trade Organization. Now, I have to tell you, in a lot of sectors, such as automotive, China is not in the World Trade Organization. But in the field of microelectronics, China is within the World Trade Organization. Al Gore undermined national security with his military electronic component outsourcing plan. In conjunction with that disastrous, misguided U.S. economic policy, the military, under the direction of then-Vice President Al Gore, was streamlining, quote-unquote, U.S. military procurement protocols. Mr. Gore implemented a set of policies which relaxed the stringent manufacturing and testing procedures required to pass the tight MilSpec 883-C2 standards for all military electronic hardware and systems. The net result was the Pentagon could continue to buy all the weapon systems they desired, but with cheaper off-the-shelf components. After all, they were in many instances the same part, just made to civilian standards, not manufactured to mil specifications, which were assured were just as good. And please consider the cost savings. The net result was the company that Mike was associated with had an excuse to shut down their dedicated military use product divisions. They could now sell off-the-shelf components to the military customers for use in sophisticated advanced weapon systems. Profitability goes up, people get laid off, cost and overhead is reduced. Good business, right? So how does this ancient political history relate to the Iranian capture of a fifth-generation U.S. spy drone? The simple answer is the outsourcing of offshoring of critical U.S. technology industries. At the time of the passage of the disastrous trade bill Mike cited above, the USA was number one in the world for semiconductor production and technology. It slipped a little bit since then, but after this offshoring, it quit altogether. Since the USA has willingly ceded that position to China and today is not even in the top 10 for semiconductor producers, China is now the country of origin for the majority of semiconductor devices used within U.S. military systems. There are very few companies left who even manufacture in the USA. So how does this affect our armed service men and women? Well, you're about to hear that in about 7 or 8 minutes when we bring Mike Harris on. It's a big effect. You think it's a coincidence that our men and women were pulled out of Iraq after learning that every piece of electronic hardware that they have is filled with Chinese chips and can easily be backdoored by those that have the codes to the firmware and the embedded software? Hang on one moment while I take a sip of something cold. We don't have any commercial breaks here at X-Squared Radio, so I have to speak literally for an hour at a time, and sometimes the voice gets a little dry. So, in about 6.5 minutes, we're going to hear from Mike Harris, and we're going to talk about the great drone caper. This is really a mystery. You know, last week I spoke about the possibility of the RQ-170 being a Trojan horse, you know, a Trojan horse, like in the movie Troy, when they came and brought a large horse fashioned as a gift to their enemies, because they couldn't get through the walls. The walls of the fort were just impregnable. So they slipped the horse inside, had a big drunken party, and during the night, while everyone was sleeping it off, soldiers slipped out of the horse and went to the gates and opened them from the inside. Yes. And so the enemy crept in and wiped out and burned the fort to the ground from the inside. And I thought, gee, what an intelligent plan to make a beautiful drone and to fly it deep into Iran and then land it safely on their airport and say, here you go, have at it. Meanwhile, it's, tapping into all of their Wi-Fi networks and their cell networks, and it's just downloading and maybe even uploading viruses into their systems. What a great idea. I was wrong. Well, I mean, I was right and I was wrong. I was right that it was a Trojan horse, but I was wrong that it was our Trojan horse. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, yeah. And let's go ahead and take the break. It's about 8:54 Eastern Time. If you want to be part of the program, and I encourage you to go ahead and get in the queue, because when Mike comes on, the phones are going to fill up pretty quickly. This guy is an expert, and we will be discussing classified and unclassified things, and we won't hold anything back. The number is 888-429-5471. We'll go ahead and take our break now. We'll be back in about 3.5 to 5 minutes. Don't go away. We'll come back with more X Squared Radio after this. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know.
Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. My guest this hour is Mike Harris, staff writer for Veterans Today magazine. His bio will be listed on the website. Don't want to take up a lot of time with that right here. Welcome to the program, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brooks. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. I want to remind our listeners, we have two call-in numbers, toll-free anywhere in North America, 888-429-5471, and anywhere else outside of America, 530-413-6472. You know, I became fascinated with this drone event that happened in Iran. And some things just didn't make sense to me, Mike. And I was talking about it last week, and one of our listeners wrote in during the program and said, you need to speak to Mike Harris. He wrote a great article on this. And I read the article, and it just knocked my socks off because you're so well-informed. And I had spoken last week about the fact that it might be a Trojan horse, and I thought, maybe we had landed it there, and it had a bunch of surveillance equipment and maybe tracking devices in it, so as they took it apart and shipped it to wherever, North Korea, China, Russia, whatever, that we would be able to track wherever it went. I was wrong. It wasn't our Trojan horse. Whose Trojan horse was it?
Well, in my opinion, I believe it belongs to the Chinese. I think that our government, during the Clinton administration, has made a number of strategic blunders, and that's being kind. It may have been treason, but the fact that we signed those trade treaties with China, which allowed China access to all of our key technologies, and in this particular case, it's semiconductor technologies, which they had access to. And this goes back to, if you remember the 1992 election cycle, when Ross Perot was running against George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton.
And Perot said, remember that.
Yeah, Perot said, if you sign these trade treaties, that giant sucking sound you hear is going to be American jobs leaving the country. Well, that part came true, but the other thing that left the country was American technology. And because of those treaties, China now has complete access to the entire U.S. patent portfolio.
Well, I'm amazed by that because, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, 90, 91, we were like the number one semiconductor maker in the world. Certainly Israel had a lot of technology, Intel and computers were getting faster and faster. I think it was 1996, the internet finally got, you know, high-speed internet started entering the home, and computers became more and more common at home. But the cost was coming down by leaps and bounds, and this is because of the free trade agreements. We were exporting the chip technology, and it was being made cheaper and cheaper by China. And that's fine for computers and TVs and stereos and cell phones, but what else did it get into?
Well, it got into it concurrent with the trade agreements being signed. Al Gore, when he was vice president at the time, decided that the cost of military procurement was too high, and so they developed a streamlining approach to where they would allow military contractors, the people who actually build the systems, whether it's Boeing or Grumman or Raytheon, but instead of using a mil-spec part, which they dumbed down the mil-spec. It used to be 882-C3. Now they've relaxed it to, so it's mil-spec 882H, which is a greatly relaxed set of specifications on there. And now they can buy essentially what amounts to an off-the-shelf component for a highly sensitive million-dollar or, in some cases, billion-dollar defensive system. And that's really a tragedy. That these were some, if not political errors, they were treasons by our elected officials who either were short-sighted and stupid or else they had ulterior motives. I don't know which.
Well, you know, it's a good question because I'm in the industry as well, in a different sector of it, not military. And one of the things that we notice about, you know, microelectronics is there are really three aspects to it. The hardware, which needs to be able to withstand very cold temperatures, very hot temperatures, vibration, etc. There's also a firmware side to it. This is sort of a burned-in hard code that tells the chip how it's going to handle data. And then there's the software side of it. What kind of software actually makes it run, how it makes decisions, and where it routes this information. But in many cases, the firmware can operate as a subroutine if you know the code to turn it on.
That is absolutely correct. And that's where I think the how the Iranians gained control of that drone and were able to safely land it with minimal damage. And so what happened here, the semiconductor industry had a bit of a paradigm shift sometime in the mid-90s. There are a couple of companies out there. One of them was Cadence Systems, came up with a really neat set of design software, which allowed them to have standardized design rules to where anybody can, in the old days, you used to have a really, really exceptionally bright engineer to design a chip. And so what they did is created a set of design rules to where anyone can sit down at a workstation, anyone with just a simple BS degree who's above average intelligence can sit down and design their own set of a mask and everything else that goes into manufacturing a semiconductor quite easily. And so what it did is it turned from proprietary, difficult knowledge set into a commodity type device, where it's not how it became how many meters of, it became how many gates do you need on how many square meters of silicon. It really commoditized the entire business. So that's, we're getting into technical stuff here. It's probably, boring to most people, I don't know, but there's been some critical boons to the industry that have been somewhat abused. And like you said, U.S. went from number one in the semiconductor production globally, on dollar volume, and now we're number eight or nine. We're way at the bottom of the pack, and China is gone up to number one. And our military contractors now buy openly from China. It may have a U.S. label on it. It may say, Texas Instruments, or it may say someone else. We have no idea where the country of origin that was made in.
You know, most of the average people, and only above average people, listen to X Squared Radio. When they think of, the integrated circuits, microchips, they think of, well, gee, they're getting faster and faster and smaller and smaller, and that those are the innovations that are being made. But as you noted in your article, anyone who has a cell phone has a system with a hardware backdoor installed. Even if the phone is powered off, the FBI, our own FBI, can turn on the device and listen to any conversation within range of the cell phone. If your cell phone, even if it's turned off, it can also be used to locate the cell phone using the embedded GPS technology. And you note, and I underline this is required by Homeland Security legislation for every cell phone sold within the United States. These are innovations that have been done in the microcircuit industry. This is the industry that China dominates. So if this kind of technology is out there for the FBI to get a hold of, what is so hard about making it available for China to get a hold of?
Well, nothing at all. We've really given them the keys to the kingdom. And what my concern is our entire military has changed their approach, their whole strategic approach, to where they rely heavily on very intelligent smart bombs, smart missiles, cruise missiles, all this type of stuff that has a lot of intelligence or a lot of computing power built into it. So if one item like a drone can be hijacked, what happens when that pilot fires a missile and that missile turns around and comes back and blows his airplane out of the sky, or a submarine launches a torpedo? The same thing happens. What happens when an AWACS flying, really what an AWACS is, it's really a flying radar system. What happens when it decides to skew the data back to the operators, and so we don't know where anything is actually? On a carrier group, they have the Aegis destroyer out there that's meant as a fire control system. All of these things are vulnerable now. Since that article was published, it was published a week ago Saturday, there's been another drone has come down. This time the Department of Defense managed to destroy the drone before it was captured. This was on the Reaper variety. And the Iranians have successfully disabled the sensors on an orbiting U.S. satellite. So we've got some interesting things going on. The back doors have been discovered. People are, foreign governments are learning how to access the back doors. And they're showing us, they're showing the U.S. government, they're showing our Department of Defense that you're not as invulnerable as you thought you were. You don't have the gift of total spectrum dominance you thought you had.
Well, Mike, we're here almost at 2012. 20 years ago, in 1992, when the free trade agreement was enacted and Al Gore began to slash the military budgets by allowing them to buy cheap off-the-shelf chips, didn't any of the industry experts raise this issue with the Department of Defense? Didn't this ever come up in Congress?
Well, you're talking to me. During that time from 94 till 2000, I served as an advisor to the Committee on Science and Technology to the U.S. Congress, and I indeed raised this issue. I raised this issue with the chairman of what was at the time the number three producer of semiconductors in the world. And I got into a table-pounding discussion saying you cannot build a factory over there. Why would you ever want to do such a thing as to build a factory in China? In 10 years, they will not only have pirated and own all your technology, but they'll also own your factory. And the factory that's over there that I assisted in building is now owned by a Chinese company, which is state-owned. And I prefer not to name names. I don't need to get sued. But that's what happened. I mean, everything that I prophesized was going to happen about this, that no good could come of it. No good has come of it. And if you've ever read a book by the guy named Peter Senge called The Fifth Discipline, there is always a delay from an action to a result. And in this case, the delay has been over a decade. It's been almost 20 years from the action to the result. And now today we're facing the result of these bad actions that occurred under the Clinton administration. And now we have to live with it. What do we do next?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I speculated wildly that RQ-170 drone might have been a Trojan horse of ours, but now it seems that the Chinese integrated circuit was the Trojan horse, and inside of it were little digital soldiers that opened the gate. Now, I suspect that at first the complex data coming out of the drone, maybe encrypted high-speed data, encrypted data of video and temperature and radar and Doppler and all kinds of information coming streaming out. But the information going into the drone was pretty simple. It just comes from a simple gamer's joystick, turn left, turn right, go up, go down, that kind of stuff. I would think that the protection on the flight controls would have been a lot simpler to hack into than the sensor data coming out of the drone. And maybe that's where the safeguards were kind of lax. So once they gained control of the flight controls, and I was told by an expert out in Salt Lake City that only 22 people in the world knew how to even fly this RQ-170 drone. But I shot back at him in about 15 seconds, you know, I think any 12-year-old that has an Xbox or a PlayStation 3 and plays Battlefield or Call of Duty could get a hold of that drone and fly it right to the ground in 5 minutes flat.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And one thing I want your listeners to notice is when you look at the photographs of the captured RQ-170 drone, notice that they're not showing the landing gear.
I noticed that. Why?
I'm going to have to assume that they didn't have as smooth a landing as they would like. So I'm going to assume that there's probably some damage to the landing gear, that whenever I have an airplane, I fly, a licensed pilot. You know, occasionally, when I was learning how to do this, you'd have a little harder than usual landing, and you always get out and check the landing gear. So I'm assuming that they may have hit the ground with this thing a little harder than was spec. And you can probably blame that on an experience by the guy operating the joystick on the Iranian side.
Oh, it could be. I mean, your average Cessna weighs, what, 2,600 pounds loaded?
And somewhere between 2,600 and 3,500, somewhere in there, yeah.
And the drone weighs 8,500 pounds?
Yeah.
So a little harder landing, I suppose. Yeah, I noticed that. They had kind of skirt around the bottom of it. But the important thing is, it didn't cartwheel out in the middle of the tumbleweeds and the sand dunes. This thing landed on a runway.
Yes, it did. And, you know, that was really, as I stated in the article I wrote, this was the intelligence gift of the decade to the Iranians. And the Chinese, I'm sure, are going to get their share of, information out of it. I'm sure the Russians are going to as well. There's just this thing is out in the market. This is the fifth generation. Officially, it doesn't exist yet. They're just now announcing it. They haven't released photographs of it. It's still a black project. And for something of this magnitude, this is an intelligence coup for everybody in the world who is not on the U.S. side.
Well, so we've just spent $6 trillion for the Emperor's new electronic defense system, and we're naked. And Congress doesn't even know it.
We are naked. And, boy, when those chickens come home to roost, it's going to be a sad day. Now you'll notice that the rhetoric on the mainstream media is not so much about war with Iran all of a sudden. They're sort of taking a more measured approach.
Well, I also noticed that the last American troop left Iraq today.
Yes, they did, but if what I read is true, they're massing on the border with Syria and Jordan right now. So I don't know what's going on over there, but it's no good. We need to bring our guys home. We've had enough war in this country.
Yeah, I think the guys down at Wars R Us have had their day, and America, again, is tired of war.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I'll try not to be political and voice my political views here on this, but we need to look after American interest, and we need to bring the manufacturing that we have offshored to China and other places. It needs to come back to the U.S. And I watch the Republican debates, and I look at President Obama, and I haven't heard anybody say anything about how are we going to get these jobs back home? What are we going to do? I'll give you an example. Motorola used to be the largest largest employer in the state of Arizona where I live. And in the Phoenix area, they employed over 27,000 people as of 1999. Since this offshoring has gone on, their headcount has dropped down to less than 500 people. All those jobs that used to be in Arizona now reside overseas someplace. They're no longer in the USA.
Well, I am in the manufacturing business, and I've been in the automotive manufacturing business since the early 80s, 1982. And, I can tell you that when you can hire somebody for $500 a month that has an engineering degree, and it takes, $3,000, sometimes $4,000 a month to have that same level of introductory engineering skill in a manufacturing plant here in the United States, then on top of that, we have the highest corporate taxes in the world. And it's no wonder that every sensible manufacturer that wants to stay in business and compete offshores as much as he can.
Well, no, I agree with that assessment. So how do we change the playing field? We gave away the keys of the kingdom whenever we gave away our patent portfolio, the entire U.S. patent portfolio, everything that's registered in the U.S. Patent Office, China now has access to because of the treaty obligations our government has gotten into. So how do we change this? And I've got some ideas on that, if you wish, or do you wish to keep this a technical discussion?
No, I'd love to hear about that because, this is a scientific talk radio program, and one of those areas of science is political science. And I'm completely fascinated, not just with the way sociology is changing because of the political science, but because of the we're on the threshold of a global equation that could work, but there's countries that still lie, shall I say, inside the parentheses, and they won't become part of the equation. I don't understand how Washington, and I'm going to say the elected officials or nor the bureaucrats, plan on keeping America in business with the current political scientific model. It just won't work.
Well, I agree, and I think there's a couple things that we as a people can do. You mentioned the tax code. Our tax structure in this country, particularly for businesses, is convoluted at best, and if you hire a good lobbyist, you can get exceptions. But the people don't have any money. The country is broke. The state is broke. The federal government is broke. We're borrowing 43 cents out of every dollar. And the reason we can borrow it is because we gave the Chinese our businesses that we're supporting our country. So one of my ideas on this is twofold. Number one, let's put an import tariff on everything that comes into the country that's manufactured overseas. Somewhere, 40-50% of the cost of the cost of manufacture, cost of goods sold. Put a 40-50% import tariff on it. And use that money to dismantle the IRS and get rid of that the burden that everyone pays, then stop taxing income and start taxing what is spent and put a national sales tax in place. That way the guys who can hire an army of attorneys, tax attorneys and accountants, they don't avoid the tax like they have been doing. You heard Warren Buffett's comment where he pays less tax than his secretary does, but Warren Buffett spends a lot of money. Why doesn't he pay tax? Well, if we would realign our tax policies here to something that's a little more sensible, whereas you pay tax when you spend the money, not when you make the money, it would encourage savings, and we wouldn't have to borrow from people overseas. We could borrow from our own population, and then our people would be the beneficiaries of compound interest.
Mike, you took the words right out of my notes. It's not only sensible. It is the constitutional way to tax and raise revenue. It's specifically mentioned in the Constitution. In fact, when Teddy Roosevelt passed the income tax, it was actually unconstitutional. But again, the United States had not taken advantage of a national sales tax, exactly what Mike's talking about, a use tax. And keep in mind, Earth Explorers, that when we talk about corporate taxes, like Motorola would pay or GE would pay or Sears would pay, they're not paying the taxes. You are. They just add it to the price of the item that you're buying, and you pay it anyway, except that these taxes go to Washington. And then they shave off about 30 or 40 cents in overhead, and then they decide where those taxes are going to go. If you eliminate the corporate sales tax, it never goes to Washington in the first place. You put the national sales tax on there, and the price of the item isn't going to change at all. It's not going to cause inflation at all. The only thing it will do is put about 10 to 38% of your money back in your pocket.
Well, that, and if you have someone out there who's rather frugal and doesn't wish to spend a lot of money, they don't have to pay much tax. But there's so many decisions, business decisions, personal decisions that are made based on what the tax code is. One contributor to the real estate bubble, I feel, was the deduction you're allowed for interest on real estate, on your home. So if you take these anomalies, these distorting anomalies out of the tax code and have a more fair and more sensible tax code, if you make $100,000 a year and you want to spend every dime of it, you know what you're going to be paying, and you can allocate for that. As it is, if someone makes $100,000 a year, they try to find, they buy the most house they can afford. They try to find other ways to shelter their income from paying that tax. And I think that it needs to be brought down and be made much more logical, much more sensible, to where we encourage our own people to become savers and not this consumer-driven spending society where you have to spend every nickel you make because the government doesn't let you keep it anyway.
Well, you're right. And when you simplify the tax code, where it can be filled out on a 3x5 card, how much did you spend? This is how much you paid. There's no tax return to file, which means you don't have to voluntarily incriminate yourself by telling the government how much you made. You can make all the money you want on interest, mowing grass, cutting hair, painting houses, your regular W-2 job. Make all the money you want. But when you spend it, you're going to pay the tax.
Well, Brooks, you've just mentioned two things that I'm glad you brought up because it really adds to the conversation. One of them is you wouldn't have to fill out a 3x5 card at all, because anyone who's ever gone shopping at any store, whenever you pay for the item you're buying, they always add the sales tax to it. And the point of sale collection method is already employed. It's already widely employed in this country. There would be no additional resource to deploy such a system. And we would also be taxing the underground economy, which is estimated to be somewhere between $1.5 and $2 trillion a year, which would for the first time ever be paying taxes. Now, that includes everything from the waitress down the street who doesn't claim all of her tips, to the barber, to the guy who sells drugs. I mean, it's across the board.
It also gets all the tourists that come into this country and spend money.
Yes, and it would also, for the first time, properly tax the illegal aliens who are in the country. That's an inside joke. And just so your listeners know, I ran for governor of Arizona in 2006, and the illegal immigration problem that we have down there is drastic. But what most people don't know about that is you hear the liberal side saying that, well, they pay taxes. Well, everyone who hires an illegal, there's no way to fool this. They know they're an illegal. They may tell the guy he's making $8 an hour and make the deductions from his paycheck, and he takes it and cashes it. But the employer doesn't necessarily remunerate those funds he's withheld back to the federal government. He may keep them in his own pocket. And that's something I've discussed at length with both the state attorney general and the county attorney generals in Maricopa County. But that's other issues. But we can actually tax the real economy out there based on true commerce by employing a national sales tax.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I've written a couple of papers on it, and it, to me, it's the most logical thing in the world, but then I'm a mathematician. I'm not a politician, but I can tell you that if a system like this were employed, then politicians could not manipulate the classes the way we see that's done just about every election cycle. The poor are pitted against the rich. But this time, I gotta say, and I want your opinion on this because I'm interested in it. I don't hear a lot of sensible things being said about it. You know, it's very hard to get the public excited about doing anything unless you're going to give away free food or free beer. But here in this country right now, in almost every major city of the country, we have this Occupy movement going on. And they're not getting any press at all right now. And there are some kids out there freezing their butts off tonight and in Detroit and several other northeastern and northwestern cities that are trying to tell the nation that they're mad about the way the system works. Now, I admit that the message is incoherent. There's no one spokesman. There's no one plan, although I have spoken on this program of putting a name and a face on some signs and ask for some resignations. But nevertheless, the energy is there. And that's something we haven't really seen on the streets of the U.S. for any longer than 1 million man or 1 million woman marches since 1968. This is really a history-changing energy that we have now in our country. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing. And I look at the other side of that coin and the people who were involved in the Tea Party, which was, by the way, hijacked by the Republican Party. The Republicans felt the energy, and they hijacked it, and they stole the Tea Party. They copyrighted the name Tea Party Express, and suddenly the founders behind the Tea Party couldn't even use the name that they had developed for their movement. But I think that the Tea Party energy and the Occupy Wall Street energy are two sides of the same coin who are focused on the great injustice that's being done in this country by the 1% against the 99% who is all the rest of us. And I look at who the 1% is, what they are, and it all comes down to the big banks who have been committing fraud after fraud. They committed fraud when they originated the mortgages. They're committing fraud when they're foreclosing on the mortgages. And quite frankly, they've robbed this country blind. They have deindustrialized it, so there's no jobs left. And now they've taken the remaining money that was here. It's all gone. Nobody has any money. No one. It's and these poor kids, God bless them. I'm so proud of them for standing up and being vocal, even though that their message is not quite refined yet, as you said, incoherent. But God bless them. They're doing something to make the world a better place, and they're crying out against these injustices, and I'm so proud of them.
I am too. I mean, it takes a lot of guts to get out there and stand in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square, whether it's taking a baton beating or pepper spray in the eyes. They're bringing attention to it, and I don't know if you saw the kids that were pepper sprayed up at, I think it was in Ohio.
It was UC Davis in California.
Yeah, UC Davis. That's what it was.
And currently, I'm about 2 miles from the UC Davis campus as we speak. And so I've watched the thuggish behavior of our law enforcement officers. You see, I don't know how old you are, Brooks, but if you look back at this, about 15, 20 years ago, the focus of law enforcement changed. It used to be they were called peace officers, and their job was to keep the peace. And now our police forces have been militarized. And I look at the SWAT teams, and I look at the tank-like vehicles they have. I look at the harsh, draconian tactics. I look at how these guys are beating these kids on Occupy Wall Street. And I'm sorry, these kids are the age to be my kids. And I look at the old men, the old women who were out there with them, the 80-year-old women who are out there as part of this Occupy movement. That's my grandmother. I look at the veterans out there who are protesting against us, and those are guys and women who are my age. I mean, they're attacking all of us. They're attacking the American people with this, and I'm so offended with the path that our government has gotten on since 9/11, and I think 9/11 still has so many unanswered questions that no one has been arrested and no one has gone to jail. There's been no trial about this. The evidence was destroyed. FBI sealed the crime scene. We still don't have the release of those tapes. And I don't know what happened on 9/11. Well, I know what happened, but I don't know how it happened. But I'm just surprised that there has been no legitimate investigation. It's been the same whitewash since the first 10 minutes after those jets hit the tower. And why haven't we examined this issue? Because that has been the zeitgeist of our time. And I think it's the crime of the century.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I have not really done a tremendous amount of investigation into it because I don't have the means or the tools to do it. And I don't know what evidence to trust. I've heard everything from all the gold underneath the towers being hijacked to that. You know, I watched it happen live on TV from my office. I watched my business evaporate in about 45 minutes. I was in the process of launching a new freight airline, and Aon Insurance was underwriting purchase of and conversion of these freight airplanes that we were going to buy and convert and operate for what's called zone skipping for FedEx and UPS and other delivery companies. Aon Insurance office was located in the World Trade Center.
I understand.
So watched my papers get blown out the other side of the window, so to speak. And I had enough money in the bank to make 6 more paychecks for my employees till they could all find jobs, and then I closed the company. It didn't go bankrupt, but it was done. So I have a special place in my heart for terrorists who would fly an airplane. But I have to say that from an anthropological point of view, a sociological point of view, they won. The terrorists won because they made us do exactly what they wanted us to do. We gave up our liberty.
Well, yes and no. I don't think the people willingly gave up their liberty. I think our government has used the opportunity to take our liberties from us. And I'm sorry, but I think that there was collusion in there, and I don't know. Like I said, there's not been a proper investigation of that entire 9/11 incident, and so I can't speak with authority that, yes, this happened, no, that didn't happen. But there's so many open questions that need to be addressed that have not been addressed. How did NORAD stand down for the first time ever? Why was NORAD not able to do its job? You know, if you want to look at, you know, perhaps government collusion on there, that might be something to examine. Why was NORAD not on the job that day?
I had no idea. I had no idea. But all that aside, the event is over. The event is done. And I still have to take my belt and my shoes off when I fly from city to city inside America.
Well, yes, you do. And have you noticed that just last week, American Airlines finally buckled under the pressure that people are not flying anymore because they do not wish to have that invasive treatment done to them, that illegal search and seizure, violation of the Fourth Amendment every time you go through an air terminal?
Well, that may be part of it. I spoke to some pilots, and they said they had not had a raise since 2002, which is a long time to go without a raise. But in the meantime, all the managers, presidents, and officers of American Airlines gave themselves hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses during that same period of time. So now they're filing bankruptcy to finally break the union and then start the airline back up union-free. That's what I hear from that side of the wings.
And that makes perfect sense because you look at the assault on American labor. The American middle class is being destroyed, absolutely being destroyed. And your earlier point that, well, you can hire a guy in China with a an engineering degree for $500 a month, the same new hire in the U.S. is going to cost you $3,000 or $4,000 a month. Let's do the engineering in China. So as long as we have that assault on American labor, and it's all labor. I mean, we allowed ourselves to fall into the false paradigm of, well, he's white collar, he's management, he's blue collar, he's labor. No, we're all labor. Unless you're capital, unless you're the guy whose money it is, you're all labor, you're all expendable. I can hire you and fire you by the dozens.
Well, it's true. And what I'm watching happen to the economy, and I didn't used to think the economy was a science. I thought it was just a giant amoeba, a giant cartwheel that you put money in one end, it goes through 16 or 17 venues, and it comes out the other end, and it just keeps going around and around and around. And I thought for a long time what happened to the economy is the wheel stopped turning. And so the dominoes began to fall around the wheel, and the banking industry and housing industry and all that just fell apart. Well, that isn't what happened at all. It's like, and I've mentioned it on this program before, I'll tell you the same thing. It's like 10 guys coming to a table to play poker. And they play for a certain period of time until nobody can ante up. And they all look around the table and say, wait a minute, somebody should have a big pile of chips at this table. But there are no chips. All the chips are gone from the table. That's the strange thing.
That is the strange thing. And there's a lot of speculation about this. Where has the money gone? I could quote some other authors. You know, you read Joseph Farrell's books. You read Dick Hoagland's books. They all support the premise that we have a shadow government that is funding black programs under the table that no one knows about, no one talks about, that we don't know it. If Richard Dolan's another one who suspects that there's a breakaway civilization that has taken the technologies that have been repressed during our lifetime and prior and has developed these things and used our money to fund it. But I can't speak definitively on that. I just know what I've read. But it makes sense because all the money is gone. It's not just the U.S. that's broke. Look at all of Europe is broke. China has their own problems right now with their real estate bubble that's going on. They've got tens of thousands of acres of development out there that nobody's occupying.
Oh, that's true. Oh, it's way more than that. I was there last year. I went to Jiangsu City, which is they spent $8 billion building the city. I don't know how far $8 billion goes in China, but it goes a lot further than it goes here. I took a high-speed train, 315 kilometers an hour, from Shanghai, about an hour and 20 minutes, to Jiangsu City. When I got there, I was amazed. It was a huge grid of wide, paved roads with factory after factory after factory and company names on the factories like Kia and other factories. And there was nobody there. There was no power on. I went to meetings in buildings that make automotive components in the dark. We went during the day, but there's no power on in the building.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting phenomenon. We're watching the bankrupting of the entire globe right now, that no one has any cash. There's no money out there. Our financial system is broken, and really we need to reinvent the financial system from the ground up and do it on a localized basis so that we don't have this great manipulation. There was an interesting article that came out. It was produced by Cornell University. Some researchers there have identified a financial entity there that they've taken the 50,000 largest companies in the world, and really it comes down to 50 companies control 50,000. And they all have interlocking boards and interlocking investment with each other, but when it's doing well, I guess it does really well, but when it does poorly, the thing suffers and dies.
Well, I mean, what we have to do, Mike, is you got to answer the question, what is value? Now, when this nation was first founded, the value was the sweat and ingenuity of the American, frontiersmen. But over, a very few years, gold became the standard of value. And it's been the standard since Julius Caesar. And it, strangely enough, buys the same amount of hard goods now as it did in 1850. The problem is the gold is gone. The United States in 1999 was said to have somewhere around 361 1,000 tons of gold in Fort Knox. But in 1959, we had 702. So where did the gold go? And a real strange story is in 1999, we shipped something around 5,000 bars to China to balance the trade imbalance. And when the gold bars got there, the Chinese had them audited. So they drilled
a tungsten.
Small hole. Yeah, yes, they were gold-plated tungsten. Yes, and those had been in Fort Knox for a long time. They were serial numbered.
Yes, these are all puzzles of our time. That here's a conclusion that I've come to. Even though we can't see these secret forces, these hidden forces out there, we can see the influence that they have. The analogy that I use is like you look at a billiard table made out of slate, and it's flat, it's level, and you should be able to roll the billiard ball from one end to the other in a straight line. But what happens whenever you roll that billiard ball and it makes a great arcing curve? You don't have to see the influence on it, but you know something is influencing it. And something out there is influencing human society on this planet. And I don't know what it is. And I have not been able to determine what it is because it's so well hidden. But I can see the influence.
Well, they got to be living like the rest of us, more or less. I mean, a billionaire is a billionaire, but they don't live any different than we do. They live in the same cities. They fly the same airplanes. They breathe the same air, eat the same food. They live on the same planet, I hope. I don't see any Shangri-La being built out there for the ultra-wealthy where they're going to hoard everything for themselves. And, you know, haven't they figured out that they got to have people that do stuff or they're not going to have shoelaces?
Well, you know, that's the question. Nothing happens until somebody makes something. That's how your earlier question about how do you measure value was an interesting point. And that really is, how do we measure value? We've allowed ourselves to become so specialized. Whereas if we go back in time just to, let's say, 1750, if you were a farmer, you had to do a lot of things. You had to know how to grow your own food, know how to shoe your own horses, know how to make a wagon wheel.
How to make your own soap.
We've lost all those skill sets now. And so we've got specialized people who can make a lot of things very quickly, and very efficiently, but they can't make a lot of things. Each person is only involved in one aspect of staying alive, whereas the entire human experience has changed in the last, 150, 200 years to where, a person had to have a multitude of skill sets just in order to survive and provide for their family. And we've lost those skills. They're gone. We've allowed ourselves to be specialized.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, that we've had to develop a brand new skill set just in the last few years. We've had to learn to text and walk.
Yes, indeed. And these kids are amazing at texting, but how are they at building a wagon wheel? Do they know how to make a barrel? Can they make pottery and make themselves a mug to drink water out of? Those are the things. And we always adapt to whatever the imposed requirements are for us. And the requirements have changed, so our specializations have changed.
We have become specialized. We have to. We have other things we want to do with our time. We want leisure. We want entertainment. We want to be able to only work 8 hours a day, which is not something that society has been able to do in the previous, 10, 20,000 years. And as we began this segment, as a country, we need, as you said in your article, certain strategic industries. And in this computer age, we need a strong and vibrant semiconductor industry that we cannot safely or prudently outsource to anyone because it is integral to the things that keep us safe and free. And if those things are dissolved before our eyes, or when we push the green button go and nothing happens because somebody on the other side of the line is sitting there with a red button that says off and there's nothing we can do about it, we have to stand down, don't we? Don't we have to stand down and reevaluate everything?
Well, Brooks, you're absolutely right, and we need to have a strong and vibrant semiconductor industry. We need to have a strong and vibrant software industry to support the semiconductors. You can't buy a printed circuit board that's made in this country anymore. I think there's two or three manufacturers, and they're all small job shop type things. No one has production-worthy capability of this in this country anymore. We have outsourced it all. But let's take this opportunity and learn from it and not make the same mistake twice. And let's reindustrialize this country. Let's put ourselves back to work, and let's put a 40 or 50% trade tariff out there. And let's don't make it... we can still get away with that if we allow our own company, let's say it has a General Electric label on it. GE is regarded as an American company, but if they're manufacturing something overseas and not manufacturing it here, we should apply the same trade tariff to them as well. Anything that's not manufactured within the USA should have a tariff on it, and those tariffs should go to abolishing the IRS and back to the national sales tax. And keep it simple, keep it so it makes sense, so that we're not working at cross purposes to avoid tax ramifications.
I couldn't agree more. I'm wondering, you know, this election has the feel of the Carter-Reagan election. It really does. I mean, you remember when Carter was elected, Nixon had been impeached and Agnew had resigned, and so the Speaker of the House, Gerald Ford, became president by default. And he did a good job of just kind of staying out of the way and not really changing much and not really making policy. And he was, you know, quickly defeated by Jimmy Carter. And Carter, you know, I don't know what happened there, but what our energy costs went through the roof. Our inflation went through the roof. Our interest rates went through the roof. It was the most unbelievable time. Even though I was just getting out of high school as it was happening, it was a time when the nation had lost its way. We had lost our soul, it seemed. And when Reagan was elected, it was like electricity flowing through the circuits again of the country. And I have a feeling that's what this election feels like.
Well, I watched the Republican debates, and with one exception up there, I think the rest of the candidates for the Republican nomination look like they belong on the Gong Show.
What was the one exception? Because we like Ron Paul here at this program.
Well, I like Ron Paul as well. He's the guy. He's been consistent. He's been true. He's a constitutionalist. And right now, our Constitution is under assault. I am so offended that our 93 senators voted to pass that defense authorization bill to allow U.S. citizens to be interned as detainees within our own country indefinitely and without right to trial. That turns us into a police state right now. And we've been a police state since the 2000 election coup, when the Supreme Court decided that George Bush was going to be president. And believe me, I'm a Republican. I'm a bit of a right-wing Republican. But whenever you have the Supreme Court deciding an election, not the people, not the voters deciding an election, something is wrong. And we've been living a lie since that time. And this recent defense authorization bill that allows U.S. citizens to be detained is offensive to me. And it changes the whole paradigm. It changes what America was into something I don't want to see it become.
Well, maybe the energy that's out there on the sidewalks and city parks all over this country, when springtime comes, I'm sure their population will rise. Maybe that energy will filter out into the ranks of voters. And maybe this time, the mainstream media will not announce who was president 6 months before the election takes place.
Well, I think that the mainstream media is owned and is the propaganda wing of the current powers that be. And I don't think we're going to get any help out of the mainstream media. I think it's up to alternative media sources like X Squared to bring the truth to the people out there. I think the internet has done a wonderful job getting dissenting opinions out in public. And they're looking at a bill to turn the internet off, to be able to shut websites down at will. So we're making a difference, and I think they're afraid. I think the powers that be, and I mean the government as well as all the institutions that go with this, the banks that are too big to fail, the Federal Reserve, all of these institutions, they know what they've done. And they're afraid that when the people find out what has been done to them, that there's going to be blood in the street, theirs. And I think that's why these bills are coming our way, and why they're in violation of the Constitution. Anybody who voted for that Defense Authorization Act needs to be hung for treason. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know about hung, but certainly voted out of office. We don't take our elected officials out and hang them, but we do take them out and send them home.
Well, just let me give you a little tidbit here. I did run for governor of Arizona. I was defeated. But let me give you a tidbit. 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins the election. That's not democracy.
That's true. I totally agree. And I've told the listeners to this program that they're about to be almost overcome, deceived by the largest propaganda machine in human history in the next 12 months, and not to be dissuaded by it. By the way, I have a text from Jane Doe for Mike. She says, first, I would like to agree with his views on how most Americans feel about the method airlines use to search and allow passengers on board. She asks, wouldn't it be simpler to issue the passengers who are born in the U.S. IDs that have been vetted by their own management vehicle or U.S. authority like the DMV or passport agency, so there are passengers who can bypass the search at the gates and not have to have their privacy invaded and their bags opened up and their clothes rifled through?
Well, Jane, I'll direct this answer directly to you. That is why whenever I travel, either foreign or domestic, I use my passport as my primary identification. But it doesn't bypass me on the TSA lines. I still have to go through them.
So, you know, most of America is never going to get out on those sidewalks with Occupy America. They're not going to get out in the parks. They're not going to take a baton or take a pepper spray. But most of America is going to travel, if not by air, by other means. And the TSA is currently gearing up to take over rail, bus, and even freeway access.
Well, that's the thing. This Defense Authorization Bill allows the military to set up highway checkpoints, where you can't even drive down the interstate highway without having to go through a mandatory checkpoint where they can pull you out of your car, search it, search the contents, and imprison you at will if they choose to. That's why this is so dangerous. And I think the way to resist this thing is through passive resistance. And that is, take your money out of your bank, put it into a local credit union, don't fly. I'd like to see a national strike for a week just to bring all commerce to a halt. Just to wake them up and say, look, we're not going to take this. We don't want to break the laws. We're all law-abiding Americans here, for Christ's sakes. We don't want to break the laws, but we don't want our government to break the laws either. And is it too much for the American people to ask for an honest and forthright government? Is that too much to ask, just honesty out of our elected officials?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I've told listeners to this program that if you really want to see less highway patrolmen on the roads, which I call revenueers, try driving the speed limit. If everyone drives the speed limit, their budgets will go out of business, because without the revenue from those citations, they have to cut budgets, and those cops have to go.
Yes, they do, and I recommend everyone obey the laws like you've never obeyed them before. Because with the new draconian items that have been passed relative to this National Defense Authorization, if you have 7 days' worth of food, they can put you on a terror watch list. That's how bad it's gotten. So if you have 7 days' worth of food in your house, you can be placed on the terror watch list. They keep expanding it. They keep growing it. They know the people are unhappy, and they know the people want change, but they want to maintain control. And I'm sorry, I'm at the end of my wits here. That's the only thing that I can recommend is just passive resistance, to where there's nothing overt, maintain the law, obey the law always, but don't make it easy for them.
I have another a texter that has written in a question. Does Mike think the police force, which you and I both agree, has become much more militaristic and much less Andy of Mayberry, will learn the lessons of the 60s, a la Kent State, I would think, and begin backing down or away from their tyrannical orders being given to them of how to treat protesters?
In my opinion, I think it's going to get much worse before it gets better. I really think that we're going to see blood in the streets here within the next 12 months. I hate to say it, but I don't see them backing down. I don't see our government listening to the people. And a good example I'll give you is Obamacare. Nobody wanted Obamacare. 70% of the population opposed it, but yet it passed anyway. So your elected officials are responsive to the money. And 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. So they're going to do whatever they have to do to keep the cash spigot on for the campaign funds in order to keep to retain their jobs. Just this,
well,
hate to be so blunt, but that's it.
I hope not. I hope that America has not become a population of professional voters. That that now that we can vote for ourselves a piece of the coffer, that is to say, the treasury, that we will not succumb to the conflict of interest and vote selfishly to perpetuate the government check that comes to us personally in favor of putting somebody in office who promises to keep that check at its highest level just for you, and give up the liberty and the Constitution that formed what I think Mike and I both believe is the greatest nation to ever exist on the face of the earth.
Well, Brooks, I agree with you 100% on that, but I'm fearful. We have 48 million people currently on what is food stamps. The modern equivalent is the EBT card right now. So you count on 48 million voters are going to vote with whoever party promises to raise their benefits. Then you have what portion of the population on Social Security. They're going to vote for whoever votes to raise their benefits. We have so many people living off of government largesse, and the private sector is shrinking while the government sector is growing. I think the deck is stacked. I think we need radical change in this country, but I really think that people have to step outside their own personal interest and vote for the good of the country.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but I have used food stamps in the past when I was a poor, impoverished student with four small kids at home. But I took it as a student loan, and I've paid it back 1,000 times over because I've been a taxpayer ever since. I think if you are going to receive food stamps, you need to be doing something to improve that training, unless you're just indigent. But you need to be going to school. You need to be in some kind of job training. It is a hand up, not a hand out. And I don't think the solution is going to come in this space of three square meals. We didn't take a short amount of time to get ourselves in this hole. It is a design that has unfolded over the last 40 years, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. But we realize that the frying pan is getting pretty warm, and it's about time we jumped out of it, or we're going to be cooked, I'm afraid.
Well, Brooke, I agree with you 100% on that. We didn't get here in a day. We're not going to get out of this in a day. But the best welfare program you can give a guy is a good job.
I couldn't agree more. And small business creates those jobs. I think that's one thing that I could count on Ron Paul. I love what he said about the way federal government would send money back to the states. It would all be earmarks. There wouldn't be any federal programs, or very few. The earmarks are what direct the money to specific projects. Yeah, some of them are porky, but most of the money is used locally. It's kept out of the hands of the major corporations. It's hands off from the people that love to rape the general fund. And I think if he cuts the budget 43%, $1 trillion in the first year, I think we could get a leg up on it, actually.
Well, Brooks, you've been in private enterprise before. You've had your own businesses. You've run it. I've run my own before. If I had a budget deficit, a budget shortfall, I would merely go across the board at every department and cut it by 4% or 10% or whatever kept me within the black. How come our own federal government can't take an axe to the budget and just cut a mere 4% a year for 4 years, resulting in a 16% reduction in the amount of federal expenditures? How come they can't do it? Leave it to the secretaries of the various departments, whether it's agriculture, commerce, education, defense, whatever. But merely reduce your expenditures by 4% per year for 4 years to have an orderly transition. At the end of 4 years, we've shrunk the federal budget by 16%. We're back in balance.
I couldn't agree more. It's not that you're preaching to the choir. You're at the right place. You're talking about this at the right place. I have a listener that's written in and mentions that a satellite was hijacked within the past few days. And I think that's what you had mentioned, that the Iranians had actually shut off the sensors of one of the satellites that was flying over Iran.
Yes, they did. God bless them. What it does... See, the other thing you have to ask yourself, how did the Iranians know that the drone, where it was, what it was doing? Because the drone's at 50,000 feet. It's invisible to the eyes. It's invisible to radar. How did they know it was there? And I'll give you the answer. The answer is you don't look up to see the drone. You look down to see the drone.
And it casts a shadow.
It casts a shadow. And that's how you find the drone. You look, you're downward looking, and you look to see where the drone is because of the distortion in the field where the drone is crossing. So that's how they found it. So the Iranians did more than merely blind the sensors. They managed to hack into the sensors and take raw data in order to locate that drone. So that's just more evidence of another back door that's in the U.S. satellite systems right now. So really the U.S. Department of Defense can't trust anything that's coming to them electronically because they gave away the keys to the kingdom. This is the biggest screw-up ever for our national defense.
Well, either it was a screw-up or it was intentional, and I tend to agree with you. If it was intentional, if there were organizations in our bureaucracies or our elected officials, whether the Intelligence Committee or others, that knew about this and still let it go, at the very least, they should be thrown out of office immediately, impeached and thrown out of office, and they should be prosecuted. However, I don't think we could rely on the current Department of Justice to prosecute anything.
No, we cannot. That's why we need citizens' commissions to look into this. But let me give you another piece of the puzzle of what happened during the Clinton administration. There was a company called Loral Corporation, which had exclusive license from the Department of Defense, which used taxpayer dollars to develop two things, a targeting system for nuclear weapons, ICBMs, and the capacity to put multiple reentry vehicles into a ICBM head. So you had one launch vehicle where you could pack up to 8 nuclear weapons in there that could be targeted independently. Loral Corporation had exclusive license to that technology from the federal government. Our taxpayers paid to develop that technology. Loral was the sole provider to the Department of Defense for those items. Loral Corporation, after China was let into the WTO, sold that U.S. taxpayer license to China. Prior to that issue, China couldn't get within 100 miles of a nuclear. They might be aiming it at Seattle, but they'll be lucky to hit within 100 miles of Seattle. Now we can put them with it because of our U.S. taxpayer dollars that develop targeting technologies. Now they can put that within 50 yards of the Sky Needle in Seattle now. And so that's just an example, but all of this technology was pirated and was given to the Chinese during the Clinton administration. That's when the floodgates opened up.
And wasn't it not only delivered by the Clinton administration? I believe Hillary was involved in that. And it seems to be about that time that Chinese monks were giving paper bags full of cash to the Clinton administration in the form of campaign contributions.
And in addition, the Speaker of the House at the time was Newt Gingrich, who is now seeking the nomination for the Republican Party. So they keep recycling the same players time and time again. We have a cancer in this country, and a lot of it resides in our government. And we need a good old-fashioned Soviet-style purge to cut the cancer out. We the American people, have to remove this cancer. Otherwise, we're all going to end up either dead or slaves.
Well, it's a little bit difficult to do with our current Constitution, but it does allow for a good worming. And I think a good worming would be a great thing. This election cycle, we throw out every single elected official that has served more than 3 terms. Gone. Oh,
I don't think we should limit it at 3. I think we should throw them all out just on principle, whether they've been there 1 term or 10 terms. Get rid of all of them, from the school board on up. Vote every judge out of office. You know how they have that segment where should we retain Judge so-and-so? No, get rid of all of them. They're all, I mean, the corruption in this country is rampant. They don't know how to steal it any faster.
Somebody asked me the other day, well, who would we replace them with? I said bus drivers, school teachers, mechanics, engineers, pilots. That's who you replace them with.
Well, Brooks, I would rather at this point in time pick random people out of the phone book than send the bunch of crooks that we have in the back.
That's really good, because, I mean, random people out of the phone book could certainly do better with the English language than Maxine Waters and Sheila Jackson Lee.
Well, they couldn't do any worse, and they just couldn't. And like I said, it all comes back down to money, and it's the candidate with the most money wins 96% of the time. That's a plutocracy. That's not a democracy. We have the foundation, we have the structure to resemble a democracy, but not whenever you can buy these elections like this. And the politicians are up for sale. The one with the most money wins. That's how the game works. That's how it's played.
Well, Mike, what do you say this election cycle? We all press no sale. Not none of the above. No sale. Pick the one candidate that can make a difference. Not for his hair, not for his height, not for his great smile or the way he answers every single question with perfect sound bites, but for his policies, his proven policies over the decades that he's been in public service, for his reliability and his integrity in his personal life, his marriage, his long career. Pick the candidate that's right.
Well, you're not going to hear any argument out of me on Ron Paul, and unless Jesse Ventura decides that he wants to run, Ron Paul probably has my vote.
Interesting stuff.
Jesse Ventura is another rabble-rouser who nobody's going to shove around. I mean, nobody's going to bully this guy.
I agree with you. Jane writes back, Mike, I love my congressman, but after taking into consideration all the recent military and financial debacles, I am going to vote him, the senators, a current president, out. Maybe each and every election until the government gets down to doing the business of defending the country and out of the business of doing business the private sector is best managing, supply and demand.
Well, tell Jane I agree 100%. And to circle back on the issue about airport searches, if the TSA is really doing something, how come we have an open border with Mexico that we have 6,000, 8,000 people a night coming across that border? If we really have security problems, if we really have a national security issue, it's more intense on Mexico than it is at the airport, mom and dad and grandma and grandpa going to the kids to Disneyland will ever be.
I agree. I don't care how many reports they make to the Intelligence Committee or to Congress. Look how many terrorist plots we stopped at Spokane International Airport or Mile High Airport. I don't care. It's the border, stupid.
It's the border. And if they wanted to get some, I mean, come on, let's do the math here. They're bringing hundreds of tons of drugs into this country every year. Do you think they'd have a hard time sneaking a biological weapon across the border? Do you think they'd have a hard time sneaking a small nuke across the border? The answer is not no, it's heck no.
You're exactly right. Mike, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. This segment's gone 73 minutes. I'm the host, so I can go as long as I want.
Well, so, Brooks, thank you so much for the invite. I really appreciate it. It's good to speak to your listeners. And take care, brother. We've got an interesting ride ahead of us. It's like the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. And we do. And let me leave you with one of my father's favorite sayings. He's deceased now, but he always used to laugh and say, just remember, the rich get richer and the poor have children.
Well, that's true. They do. Except for in India. They've managed to shift the birth rate by 30% to the male side. Kind of an interesting anthropological change. We're going back to the civilization makeup that we had in the 1940s.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm not prepared to discuss that this evening. And I have another obligation that's pressing. I've got a 13-year-old young son that needs to be picked up.
So, all right. You take care of that. It's been a pleasure having you on the program. And don't forget to pick up Veterans Today. Mike is a writer for that. And I've encouraged him to write a book. This is very interesting stuff, and he's a good writer. Thanks so much, Mike.
Hey, Brooke, thank you so much for having me. Hope to do it again sometime.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, Earth Explorers, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about this Battlefield America. I appreciated having Mike on the program. The reason I brought him on is because he is an expert. He was involved, integrally involved, in counseling and, as he said, table thumping, trying to explain to the administration what was going on. Oh, yeah, very good. Okay. So we'll take a quick 4 or 5 minute break, and we'll be right back with more X Squared Radio.
Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TVT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TVT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Glad to have you with us here at X Squared Radio. You're tuning in and getting squared, and that's good. I would like to ask you all a question, and if you're out there listening, I would encourage you to call in, or you can Skype in with a text message at X2-Radio. X2-Radio is my Skype address. You can call in at 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471, or if you're not in North America, on planet or off planet, you can reach me at 530-413-6472. That's a new number, 530-413-6472. Three questions. How many of you are satisfied with the current political makeup, and how many want to see it change? Hang on a second, just got a new contact request. They're starting to flow in. Hold on. And how many are satisfied with media in the mainstream, and how many would like to see anchors do more in-depth follow-up stories like the one we just did in the last hour here on X Squared Radio? And the last question is, what kinds of stories would your viewers, what would you like to see mainstream media do more of? Now, I don't know the answers to those questions, but you do. This hour, and we actually only have about 38 minutes, 37 minutes, I want to cover Battlefield America. And you've heard a little bit about this in the press. I'm going to bring some things together that you probably have not heard because they haven't been compiled for you. There has been considerable confusion over the past few days as to whether the Senate, which did pass the National Defense Authorization Act, including we want to know if it included a last-minute waiver to protect American citizens from some of the bill's more outrageous and fascist elements, including the right of U.S. government to detain U.S. citizens, even those on American soil. We're not talking about U.S. citizens in a foreign country like England or Germany or even Iran or Israel. We're talking about U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. Detain them, not charge them with a crime, not give them their Miranda rights, And if they don't charge you currently, the way our justice system is now, if they don't charge you, they have to release you within 24 hours. With this new act, now it's not law yet, but with this new act, they can hold you indefinitely in a military prison without reading your rights and without charging you. This means that peaceful protesters could be rounded up, dishonestly labeled as potential terrorists or suspicious, and imprisoned for life without a trial or attorney. This means that federal military personnel would be patrolling our streets, literally signaling the end of our free republic. The offending section of the NDAA, as it's being called, has been compared to the internment camps the U.S. government ran during World War II, except this time around, it will be Ron Paul supporters, Tea Party members, and young Occupy Wall Street organizers in the detainment camps. If it doesn't matter, if a last-minute waiver is in the bill, the offending portions are currently worded so vaguely that any U.S. citizen can be considered a terrorist or an aid to terroristic activity. Any U.S. citizen who is inconvenient to the U.S. government can be detained and silenced. Here to talk about it, and if you don't want to listen to me, that's fine. You don't want to believe me, that's fine. How about Judge Napolitano? Listen to this clip.
We're shopping and dining over Thanksgiving and maybe watching some football games. Big government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. Senators John McCain and Carl Levin want to enact a law that would declare the entire United States of America a battlefield for the military. They're talking about inserting the Army into domestic law enforcement. Senator Lindsey Graham, who supports this bill, says, quote, "The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not." I guess he hasn't read the Constitution recently. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Douglas McGregor joins us now. Colonel McGregor, as always, welcome back to Freedom Watch.
Thanks, Judge.
I must tell you, I was utterly appalled when I saw this legislation proposed. We didn't learn about it until last night because the committee hearings on it were done in secret, even though the Constitution requires the Congress to do these things in public. And there were no actual hearings, just a bunch of members of the Senate who got together and wrote this thing. And it basically says the president can arrest whoever he wants anywhere in the United States of America and keep them without charging them with a crime, without letting them see a lawyer, without bringing them to a judge for as long as he wants. How is that consistent with the Constitution?
Well, Judge, you're the legal expert, but whenever you suspend due process, which in effect suspends the rule of law, you walk down a very dangerous path and you give authority to your government that it can then wield essentially without restraint. What worries me is that we'll end up creating categories of people who are then subject to arbitrary arrest. And that's dangerous because we don't know how those categories will be defined or interpreted in the future. All in all, it's a disaster and it's something that should be defeated.
You have spent a career in the military. You're also an expert in political science, particularly with respect to its relationship to the military. Do you see a role for the military in domestic law enforcement? Do you see American troops, young men and women, arresting other Americans because the president doesn't like what they've said?
I certainly hope not, and I can tell you that having served in the regular armed forces, people in the regular Army and Marine Corps have no interest in participating in those kinds of events. I'm sure there are some narrow purposes to which the military could be put to good use. I mean, clearly, if you're dealing with paramilitary drug lords and mafias on your soil, you may need the assistance of the military, but other than that, I can't conceive of any sort of circumstances that would justify this legislation.
All right, switching gears a little bit. Well, we were just talking to Senator Ron Johnson about what happens now that the super committee failed and supposedly these sequestrations kick in. Of course, they don't kick in until 2013. But if they do kick in, can the military tolerate these sequestrations? State it differently. Aren't we already spending far more than we need to defend the nation and to defend our freedom on the military?
Well, the answer to your second question, of course, is yes. And the way to go about this, and we have no way of knowing what people on the Hill will do. And remember, the people on the Hill, contrary to popular belief, are not really terribly well informed about military affairs. So they're going to be bombarded by a mix of lobbyists and generals and admirals who are going to try and pursue their agendas. But the way to do it is to cut from the outside in. That is to begin reducing and scaling back our overseas presence, which is a legacy of the Cold War, and then the expansion of that overseas presence that we went through in the 90s under Clinton and has really run out of control since 2001. So bringing those forces back, stopping the expenditures overseas, will save us at least $1 trillion in the first 3 or 4 years if it's done intelligently. Then we need to look at reform and reorganization. You're dealing with a National Security Act that was passed in 1947, Judge. This is an anachronistic command and control structure left over from World War II. We desperately need reform and reorganization. One way to go about that is to starve this beast of money and compel people to re-examine all of their assumptions, because the future is not going to look like the past.
Got it. Colonel Douglas McGregor, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
All right, that is the clip. Now, the intent was extremely bad here, I've got to tell you. Senators John McCain, Carl Levin, Lindsey Graham intended, capital letters, intended for this bill to redefine the U.S. homeland as a battlefield. Graham's words, not mine. Allowing the revocation of even our most basic civil rights and access to due process. By the way, those are in the original Bill of Rights, not in the amendments, not the 17 amendments that took place since that thing, since the Constitution was ratified. I'm talking about in the original civil rights. The right to due process and a speedy trial, and the right to not be held without being charged. That, and also, it is forbidden to use federal troops inside the United States. That is the police's business. That's the state National Guard's business, if that's what has to be done. Police are there to take care of the 2% of society that traditionally do not obey the law. That is all. Federal troops are not to be used on American soil. And keep in mind, those American troops are mostly American boys. And they're going to be employed to arrest Americans and ship them to foreign jails, and you will never be heard from again. All right, real quick, we got Brent on line 3 from Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Brooks. And just for the record, I was the person that emailed you the report from about the drone last week.
Yes, you were. How did you like Mike Harris on the program?
Oh, that was a great, great interview, and it got into a lot of very interesting things about not only that, but about the political situation that's going on today. And you're talking about the NDAA Act right now, and I think, as I understand it, the two Oregon senators were the only two senators in any state that voted against this. So the state of Oregon was the only one that shows up as wanting to completely resist this. And I know I signed petitions, I wrote letters, I called congressman's office when the vote was happening. Not to say I had a big effect, not at all. But it was amazing that it was like a 93-7 vote. And as I understand it, in order to be grouped as a suspected terrorist, it only takes a few things to put you on the list. One, if you happen to be missing a finger, if you have more than 7 days worth of food in your home, or if you have any guns or ammunition. So just based on those things alone, that could be enough justification that if somebody's suspicious about you, they can come. The military can come in and round you up.
Wow. Wow, what if you have a certain political view? What if you have a certain voting record? What if you
have a webcast
radio program?
Yeah, right. And it is a absolute travesty and a shredding of the Constitution, the last bit. I think the first major piece that got put into place, of course, was back in 2001 with the 9/11 disaster. And if you just think about the official story that came out when 9/11 first happened, it is so unbelievable. But if you look at the course of events, I mean, it's a problem, reaction, solution. The problem was, oh my goodness, there's been some terrorists that came in and attacked America. And look what happened next. The reaction, of course, everyone is terrified, and the solution is brought in immediately by the government. I think it's the government within the government, and that, you know, first of all, oh my goodness, you know, we think Iraq's got weapons of mass destruction. And I remember there was a whole series of mass media broadcasts on this, and they were showing, oh, you know, they've got anthrax, they've got this and that. And we can't let that stand. And I think it was just a smokescreen to get the war with Iraq launched, and it was at that time that the Patriot Act came out. I mean, the Patriot Act came out like within a matter of days, if I recall correctly. Here's this massive bill, and they rammed this thing through, and people only had, in Congress, only had like a day to review it. And of course,
yeah,
everybody's scared.
I think the folks down at Wars R Us had that thing all drafted out. That thing was...
It was, yeah. This thing
done.
Was planned way in advance of when these events started to actually occur. We've got the same thing going on again right now. There's a lot of hype being generated in order to drum up enough fear to get a war going with Iran. I think it's a repeat of the same kind of thing.
It's all about the oil over there. But you know, this thing,
is.
Battlefield America, this is not a drill.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not some inflammatory blogger's post. This actually happened with the Senate's passage of this bill. Now, here's the interesting thing, Brent. Senator Levin tried to state that it was not the Senate that is responsible for the more nefarious portion of this bill. He states, I'm going to play a real short clip for you. He states in the following statement from the Senate floor in his own words that it was not the Senate that put citizens in the middle of the crosshairs, so to speak. It was the president. Listen to this clip. Listen to this clip and we'll come right back.
Okay.
And I'm wondering whether the senator is familiar with the fact that the language which precluded the application of Section 1031 to American citizens was in the bill that we originally approved in the Armed Services Committee, and the administration asked us to remove the language which says that U.S. citizens and lawful residents would not be subject to this section. Is the senator familiar with the fact that it was the administration that asked us to remove the very language which we had in the bill which passed the committee, and that we removed it at the request of the administration, that would have said that this determination would not apply to U.S. citizens and lawful residents? I'm just wondering, is the senator familiar with the fact that it was the administration which asked us to remove the very language, the absence of which is now objected to by the senator from Illinois?
I'm familiar now because the senator from Michigan has shared that fact with me. I'm also...
All right, so there you have Senator Levin from the floor, post-debate. Now, these are amendments that are being debated on the floor. He's saying it wasn't the Senate that removed the protection to keep American citizens out of the crosshairs. It was the president.
Right.
Which means you're exactly right, Brent. Somebody out there wants us in the scope.
That's exactly right. I saw that clip a few days ago when it came out. So, I think definitely it's the trashing of the last part of the Constitution, and it is something that, what do we do about it now? Well, I think in a political sense, you're supporting the right candidate for re-election, because Ron Paul's the only one that's running who would really stand up and try to change what's going on. Your guest on the show tonight was saying, well, maybe passive resistance is going to help. I think there's another thing that citizens could do, and that there's a movement that I heard about that's going on in Northern California right now, where there's a group of sheriffs that have gotten together, and they're working with the citizens of California, and they're resisting. They're standing up for the Constitution and saying that on a local level, we're going to resist the interference by the federal government on our own affairs.
Okay, well, this is just nullification all over again. We had this right prior to the Civil War, where states would not enforce federal law until the state legislatures voted on and ratified that information. And that is what was literally defeated with the Civil War. And now we have 32 states, I believe, there may be more now, 32 states that have signed sovereignty acts, which at least in some respects gives legal support on a state level to what those sheriffs are doing.
Right. So we need to strengthen those state by state and work with our local government to say that, yeah, on our level, we do abide by the Constitution, and we're not going to allow anybody to come in here and just based on suspicion round people up and put them in FEMA camps or wherever they would go.
Well, you may have states saying, you know, federal troops are not welcome in our state. We'll take care of our own business with our National Guard, but we're not going to have federal troops in our state. Now,
right.
I expect that to happen.
Yeah. So that is one avenue, I think, that we would have available to us.
You know, on this program a few months ago, we read the original redresses against the King of England prior to the formation of the Declaration of Independence. All I did was change the names and a little bit of the language, and I promise, Brent, it sounded just like what's going on today between the Republic and our president.
Right. It's... Yeah, we're at a very pivotal point in history, and in order to take the country back, I think there's going to have to be, I don't know, maybe 15 million people or something that are rising up and saying, no, we're retaining our sovereignty. We are insisting on having our rights afforded to us by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and we're not going to abide by this latest act. But it's going to take a lot of people to rise up, and I honestly wonder how many people are really aware of this. I mean, this whole defense reauthorization barely made the mainstream media. I mean, you had to look around to see what was going on.
Oh, yeah, they're not talking about it at all. And when they do, they're talking about it in coached terms, so the average American doesn't know what's going on. They think when they see a convoy of military vehicles on the freeway, that they're just heading for the coast, you know, ready to get on an airplane. Those convoys are for you now. Those surveillance cameras that are all over your freeways, all over your intersections in your major cities, they're for you.
Right. I agree. It's we've gone far, far down the rabbit hole. But I think we need to stand up for our rights on a local level, and I don't know what else I could add to that at this point other than we should support the only reasonable candidate that we have for president on this next election. One of the other things that you were talking about with your guest this evening was how we really don't have, our representatives don't really represent us. They represent corporate America, and that's really true. That's one of the big pieces of the problem here. And there's an amendment that Dylan Radigan started in California to amend the Constitution to say that that corporations are not people and money is not free speech. And it's because of these the incredible will of the lobbyists that buy all the votes that has resulted in what we have. Part of which is we have now a perpetual state of war. Why is that? Well, it's probably it's fear over running out of oil, but it's also extremely lucrative for the companies that supply the weapons and the munitions and everything that goes with supporting the war movement. And there is a very strong movement within the government to make sure that we keep a war going on somewhere. And that's until we get the money out of that and can have representatives that really represent the people again, that's, I think, a big chunk of the problem.
Well, I think it can be done. If you look at this last two-year election cycle, it was a bath against Democrats. I just have to say that. I think a lot of people just pulled the Republican handle just because they didn't want to have a Democrat majority in the House any longer. And maybe that's going to happen again on this election too. But I would encourage people to just vote out all the incumbents. Don't even consider the incumbent for re-election. Pick among those that are running against the incumbent, pick the best man, and if there isn't a good one, encourage someone to run. Because, you know, you're not going to go to Washington and give up your life. You're going to go run for 2 years at a time. Maybe you'll serve 2 years, maybe you'll serve 4 years. I had a good friend, Van Hillary, that ran for Congress. He agreed to run 3 terms and come home, and that's exactly what he did. And he was a great conservative. He worked with Dick Armey and Phil Graham, and they did a great job in Washington. And he came home. But in our little town of 23,000 people, it was hard to find someone else to go to Washington and do what he did. But
right. The kinds of people that want those positions are the very ones that want to have power over others and are greedy or corrupt. That's the kind of people that are attracted.
Well, I can't say that about everybody. I think that the two senators...
No, you can't say that about everybody. But there's a lot that are like that.
Well, they are. But, you know, I can tell you our good congressman here in North Carolina does a fantastic job. He came from industry. He works for small business. He does these awesome reverse trade missions where he brings in ambassadors from all over the world to meet with small business owners here in North Carolina, and he's doing his best. But there's only so much you can do without capital. What we do see is that trillions of dollars of taxpayer capital is being laundered right back to those very major corporations that make those campaign contributions. And that has got to stop.
Yes, it does. It's the banks are the only ones that are coming out ahead on this, and that's all got to change. I mean, it's the politicians are working for the corporate voice of America, and the corporate America's in turn owned by the bankers.
Well, it could be, but the banks are doing the right thing to keep their business going, and that's laying off people. And that's exactly what our federal government should be doing. And I don't mean laying off people that are soldiers. I don't mean doing what Bill Clinton did and tried to bring down the overhead of government by bringing down the military. But it seems as though that's the path we're taking. This new budget of $660 billion is roughly one half of what the military budget was last year. That is not the way to balance the budget. The way to balance the budget is to go up there to M Street and K Street and get rid of the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, the EPA, the Commerce Department. Get rid of them on a federal level and make, if you want them to exist, that's fine. If they have a purpose, wonderful. But they will be run by the states.
Right, that's exactly right. I mean, the Department of Energy, that was formed during the Carter era, if I recall correctly, and the goal was to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. How much money have we spent on that through all these years? And look what a, you know, what a total failure. What an absolute failure.
Well,
we're importing more oil now than we ever have.
64%. But I will tell you that the Department of Energy did receive some very, very excellent proposals for reducing our dependency upon diesel by growing it and putting farmers back to work, growing our fuel out of non-food products with land that wouldn't be used to grow food anyway. But they kept all the technology. They got it. They kept it. They never gave industry any money to put it into practice. And that's why there's only a few dozen operating biodiesel plants in the country.
Yeah. Well, as long as it's done with non-food crops, I think that perhaps that would make sense.
Yeah, we're talking algae. Switchgrass or canola, you know, things that would be used for animal feed but not human feed. We use the canola oil for vegetable oil, but it's not generally a food stuff. But the canola meal is certainly used by animals for high protein, low fat, high omega protein. And the oil can be used to make diesel fuel. So you're basically having solar fuel.
Yeah. Makes more sense than what we're doing. I mean, our whole, I think the paranoia of the government is largely over trying to control oil, but petroleum. But I think it was in 2009, China surpassed us in how much oil they're importing.
Oh,
they're importing more oil than we are.
Yeah, China and India. They have a burgeoning middle class, and they want everything now.
Right. And they're starting, if I understand correctly, they're starting to make deals with other countries to import oil and buy oil without using the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency, which is only going to compound our problems when that comes to completion. I mean, we're flooded with so much currency just by the monetization or creation of money out of thin air.
Ones and zeros, man.
Diluted.
Federal Reserve is running the presses as we speak.
As we speak. And the prices are all going up. And that's enough to crash the economy right there sooner or later.
Well, actually, U.S. inflation is in check, but that's because purchasing is way down. The price of oil came down. Christmas shopping is way down. Movie industry is way down. And it's not just because they've been making a bunch of lousy movies. Some good movies did come out, and people did not go to the movies. It's because people don't have money. They're not flying. They're not driving. They're not buying new cars. A lot of industries are coming down because people aren't buying, so the prices are not going up. But the presses in Europe are running 24 hours a day because they're trying to dump, $7.75 trillion into the European market to shore up the credit market. Well, like Barnhart's report a week before last here on this program, she said that there's $100 trillion worth of debt in Europe, and there's only $70 trillion worth of production in the whole world. So the equation doesn't work out.
No, it doesn't at all. And then there's the theory that maybe part of the overall plan at the darkest levels is indeed to crash the economy and reduce the world population, and I don't know how much there is to that, but there could be something to it.
I don't know about reducing the world population. It's like I said, people got to grow stuff. Somebody's got to pump the gas. Okay, it's not going to be these ultra wealthy that are, you know, hoarding all the gold. And if they are building some kind of big underground, you know, shelter with all kinds of food and lighting and every kind of, you know, amenity known to man, I encourage them to get into it now. Go in and lock the door, and we'll take it from here.
Yeah. The American people have a great degree of inventiveness, resilience, and the ability to really turn things around when our backs are up against the wall. I mean, we did it in World War II, and I mean, I think we have the pioneering spirit of having built this country from scratch in a relatively short period of time, and so I have a great deal of faith in the people. I just think most of the people just haven't got a clue what's going on.
Oh no!
When they start to wake up.
Yeah, no. They're going to drop into a deep depression the instant that they lose their data plan on their smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. But most people haven't been directly, their lives haven't been directly affected yet. When that happens, I think we're going to see this thing pick up a whole lot of momentum.
Yeah, well, for one thing, there'll be a lot less rear-end accidents on the freeway and the city streets because people won't be texting and driving. My goodness,
indeed.
I almost saw another accident today because of that. I parked my motorcycle about 3 months ago because there's so many people out there texting and driving, they don't see motorcycles. They're relying completely on their peripheral vision, which if they wear glasses is horrible.
Yeah. I know I rode motorcycles for years, and the only way I think I survived it all was I just pretended like I was invisible and that everybody was going to make a left turn directly in front of me. And that, more than anything, I think kept me alive.
No doubt about it. The invisibility principle. Well, listen, Brent, I really appreciate the call. Thanks for the information. You see that I did follow up on it. We did have Mike Harris on the program.
Indeed. If I see anything more interesting, I'll send you another email, and I appreciate you getting Mike on the show tonight. That was great. I did have one other thought on that particular subject, and as to how the drone was hijacked. I don't know if you have enough time to spend a couple more minutes.
I got 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. It was, and I was racking my brain to find out where I heard this, but I had heard and read an article somewhere in the last 6 months or so that the computers in the flight control centers for these drones had been hacked, and there was some kind of virus that was recording all of the keystrokes. And no matter what they did to try to get rid of it, the virus kept coming back, but it didn't seem to be affecting actually being able to fly the drones. And I wonder if this thing didn't get hacked into in a whole different way than having, back doors embedded directly in the hardware, that if someone hasn't been in these computer systems and observing what's going on for maybe quite some time.
That's a fascinating thought. We did cover that about a month ago on this program about the virus that keeps showing up at Nellis Air Force Base where they fly these drones from. And the interesting thing is that these computers are not connected to the internet. They're only connected through satellite to the drones. And yet these keystroke recording viruses, and they've completely cleaned the computer all the way down to just putting another hard drive in it and setting it back up again, and the virus comes back. You're very good at stitching those things together. I appreciate that.
I think that's a really interesting idea because it's hard for me to understand how they could get something embedded actually into the hardware without being involved in the programming on some level, even if it's what the embedded firmware that's in these devices, but it has to be at a higher level than I think just the hardware itself. So I guess that thought I will leave you with, and it's been a fascinating program. Really appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate it, Brent. Spread the word. X Squared Radio's still growing. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. nice to chat. We'll talk to you soon.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
All right, Earth Explorers. Yeah, I just, you know, we could talk another hour on this subject. It gets so fascinating, the things that are happening out there. And those of you that are listening to this as an archive, thank my producer at BBS Radio. It's, as far as I'm concerned, the number one webcast radio network on the web. If you have what it takes to become a host, be sure to get a hold of me at bagnew@x2-radio.com, bagnew@x2-radio.com, and I'd be happy to sponsor you. More than one radio host currently on BBS Radio Network came in just that way. Don't forget to go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the affiliate link, and please don't forget about the Maya 2012 conference. We'll see you there, and we'll see you not next week. Next week we're going to run an archive because it's Christmas Day. But the week after that, we'll be live right here on X Squared Radio. Thank you very much, Earth Explorers. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.